Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Welcome to A Few Things, where we give our greatest discoveries the podcast they deserve. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. This show is brought to you by Avakind. Find out more and sign up for our newsletter at avakind.com.
Hey.
Hey. What's up?
So after we interviewed Chrissy Jones on the podcast,
yeah.
I took a yoga class.
I know.
I didn't do pyro things, which...
I'm glad that you fessed up to that because you had committed to Chrissy that you were going to take a yoga class.
Did I commit on air?
I can't remember. It's a great question.
Yeah, well, either way, I said, yeah, I'll do it. And then I didn't do it.
You wussed out. I remember when you canceled and it was like the biggest sigh of relief that you had.
It was like a combo of just one being, as previously stated, extremely intimidated by the concept of a hot sauce burpee. And then two... I really wanted to see a movie.
Yeah.
And Chris wanted to see a movie, and I said, I'm going to see a movie. But I went, I did it, and it
you
was...
You went to yoga class at SkyTing.
I went specifically to Chrissy's class. I forced myself to do it because I was scared of it, and I was like, you should do things that scare you, and this feels like an easy way to do a thing that scares you.
And like of
you.
All the things yoga doesn't feel like,
Not to mention, I never stretch, and I rarely do any strength workouts. So I was like, I need to do this. This will be good for a runner.
Why
and Chrissy
yoga
made such a strong
you?
Case. Oh, it didn't scare me. It was just like, I shouldn't say it scared me. It was outside of my comfort zone.
Okay.
It didn't scare me. I just haven't done it in 4 years. It didn't scare me. It was just outside of my comfort zone. Like, I don't feel like doing this. And I really loved it. My body responded very well to it in the sense that everything I was doing, I was like, I can tell my body appreciates that I'm doing this.
Your body expressed gratitude.
It did. My body expressed gratitude. My body also expressed that it was incredibly tight and it would like to do more of the stretching.
Your hamstrings probably especially.
My hamstrings.
Knowing your hamstrings like I do.
Yeah, you do know them. My hips especially. I really enjoyed the class. I thought that Chrissy's sensibility was so down to earth and kind and, like you said, not woo-woo.
Mm-mm.
And I really enjoyed it. I am very, I'm like a lazy workout person in that I only run because it's easy because you can step outside the door
you
and do it.
You are not a lazy workout
but
person.
Like, I do bar method too. But
you were also going to a trainer for a while. You used to go to a lot of classes.
Well, that's also kind of
you're
it.
Not a,
I think I did a lot of it and now I'm just in a lazy workout moment where I just want to do the
phase.
Easy stuff.
Sure.
But so I haven't been back, but I just thought her general energy, sensibility, everything was as more than I would have ever imagined for a yoga class. I really enjoyed it. It was so not intimidating. It was so not like she explained how to do everything. There wasn't any words that I didn't understand.
I think that is true for pretty much all the classes there. Mm-hmm. And after listening to our episode on SkyTing, our friend Dan.
Yeah.
Has taken two yoga classes.
Two?
At SkyTing. Yes,
he has.
He's beating you in this race that is taking yoga classes. you guys should get punch cards. There, some sort of March Madness competition or something. And he said he basically called himself like world's least flexible man and said that they don't make him feel bad.
Yeah, there's no feeling bad at all. It's hard to articulate exactly what it is about that, the sensibility at SkyTing, but it is just, it is kind without being like syrupy. It's just down to earth.
You know
earth.
What
it's
I want? Because I feel like we've been talking about SkyTing kind of, they've been getting kind of a lot of podcast airtime. Yeah. I feel like people should email us other yoga studios they feel like fit this bill in New York, in LA, in any old place. Because I feel, I'm very interested in hearing this because I feel like there are a lot of places that
I think
check
so.
This box. But it's hard to know because all of the names of the yoga studios all kind of sound the same and like the spaces look the same. It's just hard to know.
It truly.
I'm curious. I want to hear. I want some yoga studio feedback.
The other thing that I'm really excited about is this product that is one of the best sellers on the site.
Yeah.
The CBD for Life rub. We just came out with it in a new scent. It is a lavender scent. The lemongrass scent wasn't for everybody.
You know what I think it is? I don't even know if it wasn't for everybody so much as people don't really know what lemongrass is going to smell like as a thing.
Interesting hypothesis.
That's my take. That is my take.
Well, we came out, and lavender is a scent that's pretty universally loved.
Everybody knows what lavender is going to smell like.
And I will say this is a much subtler scented version of this product, which I just love this product for its soothing, wonderful, healing qualities.
Totally. You like putting it on. It makes you feel good.
Yeah. I'm, again, avoiding making medical claims.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Get 10% off it with the code a few things. Just suffice it to say, people really love this product. We sell a ton of it, and there's a reason for it. It's a great product.
Totally. Let's bring on our guest.
Related. Our guest related. Is related. Yeah.
Re-cannabis.
Yeah. So excited about our next guest. Verena Von Fetten is a writer, editor, and consultant who has worked with brands like Glossier and Instagram and been published in the New York freaking Times. She's also a consulting editor at Man Repeller. And in 2017...
And here we go. We're getting it. We're getting to it.
I listen. Yeah. I'm just reading what's in front of me, folks.
I know. It's just a real buildup. Yeah.
It is a real buildup, but we did want you to know her full resume, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, we've been there through all of this. We met you a long time ago.
Totally.
And now, the big reveal. In 2017, Verena founded Gossamer, a cannabis culture website and print magazine that looks at lifestyle, travel, and art through a green lens.
It's good.
Clever.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh my gosh.
We're so excited. You have a really good line that I think quickly sums up Gossamer, other than looking at lifestyle, travel, and art through a green lens. Will you say
which means it? You have like multiple good lines.
Yeah, you're making me repeat something I said on a Friday night.
Well, do you want me to repeat it for you?
No, what did I say? It's a lifestyle publication for people who smoke weed.
No,
okay.
That's not what you said.
But that's a good one too.
Even better. You said it's a lifestyle publication for people who also smoke weed. Yeah. And that does at least that captures my experience with Gossamer, where it's not like about weed. This is not High Times.
No, not at all.
And it's not just High Times. Like when we first talked about it, I thought it could have just been High Times, but really
fancy.
Beautifully designed and fancy. Yeah. But it's not that either.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle and culture magazine, but it does acknowledge that weed exists
as part of that lifestyle and culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Weed might be involved.
That's right.
I'm so glad you guys get it. It's so
thanks.
Nice to
do
have people
not
like,
get it.
I mean, I think most people do, but I think it's still new enough that I'm so excited to hear someone say it back to me to say it to me without me having to explain what it is.
Well, but I do think you do a very good job explaining it.
Thanks, guys.
That helps.
Thank you. Or folks, I'm trying to say guys less.
Folks, I've been working on that too. It's really hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I just never know if people care, but.
And like gals is weird.
Gals is tough.
We're all folks.
Yeah. It's true.
Obama said it. I can get into it.
Yeah.
Why did you start Gossamer? What was the impetus?
So there's a few things. I mean, one you already touched on was that mainly I felt like there was nothing in the space that really spoke to me or the people I knew in a way that didn't treat weed or cannabis like a total novelty. Like it's this new thing everyone discovered and have you heard about it?
And that if you smoke it, it's like all you think about or do.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Right. So there were all these publications sort of popping up in the space, and their thing was that they only covered cannabis, right? It's like, but I don't know anyone who consumes it that wants to read about it all day.
Right.
So that's sort of where the, like, the idea of how we were going to approach Gossamer came. My co-founder, David Wiener, and I, when we first decided we wanted to start something, we were sort of going back and forth on, you know, things that we were really passionate about. We're both, our background is in media. We love telling stories. And we felt like there was an opportunity to do something that we would, like, stand behind 100% and say, like, everything we put out is something we believe in and we're psyched about. And so, like, what is that thing? What do we have in common? And what do we feel like is sort of underserved? And what we landed on was the fact that we both smoke weed. We smoked a lot of weed together. And it's been a part of both of our lives separately, you know, for better or for worse, for a long time. Like, you know, without dating myself, probably close to 20 years for me. And that's whether I smoke daily or, like, go months without even thinking about it. So that felt like a sort of authentic thing that we really cared about. And there was a connection between us there. And then just that there was nothing in the space. So the more we started talking about it, the more I was thinking about it, that, like, I read nonstop. Magazines, websites, Twitter,
Facebook. You consume all the content.
All the content. I consume it. And I shop all the time. And I'm, like, what I would probably consider a high value customer. Like, people are constantly marketing
to me. I value you
me.
As a customer.
God, I am your biggest customer. I mean, I don't know if you guys can, like, stack that, but I'm pretty sure I'm up there.
We would have to count your boyfriend.
Oh, yes, I know.
He's pulling some weight for you.
Of a kind. It's his number one gift solution. This is not paid. And yeah, so I'm used to sort of, like, having things come my way, being like, you should buy this, or here's a new product you should hear about. And nothing. There was literally just, like, nothing coming in front of me. And so it kind of shocked me, because I want cool stuff. I want to know what's going on in the cannabis space. I'm someone who sort of, like, cares about the story behind something. I care about quality. That doesn't necessarily mean high price. It just means, like, that it's made either with, like, an intent, or there's an interesting background, or there's, like, a sustainability angle. And all of those things I felt like were an opportunity to sort of tell those stories. And then on top of that, like you said, it's just I didn't want to talk about weed all day. I wanted something that sort of reflected the way I think it's a really big community builder. Like, I've made some of my closest friends sharing a joint. I don't think there's any product or thing, not wine, not coffee, that you can share with a total stranger and have, like, an intimate, like, an instant sense of intimacy with that person. And I think that's because it's still, you know, for better or for worse, illicit. It's still federally illegal. And I think that makes a difference, though. It makes it feel more confessional and like you're sharing something with someone. And that's something we wanted to recreate with Gossamer, too.
That's fascinating.
The thing that you didn't say about why you started it, which, like, in my greedy mind is also really brilliant, is just it seems like we're poised to have a big market opening up in this, in the weed business, because so many states are slowly but surely legalizing it. A little bit TBD, because the current administration is not so psyched on it. But how did you think about that aspect of this?
That was a big part of it. Look, I love telling stories. I also love a paycheck. You know,
but it seems like there's an opportunity for a big paycheck.
Well, I don't
here.
Think you should start a media business as a nonprofit.
100%. I don't think you should. I mean, definitely not. You probably shouldn't start a brand new media business right now in general, but that was the exact idea. Is I think one, that's the reason we are a media business, or that cannabis is, that Gossamer is, because it is still federally illegal, and state by state the regulations differ so wildly, and because we don't necessarily know the timeline of when you know, the full sort of era of prohibition of cannabis will end. We saw there was a big opportunity to create basically, like, a brand and community through media, because we can exist nationally and globally
As
in a
media
way,
brand.
And you don't run up against the same issues that, like, a marijuana company that's selling marijuana or something like that would.
And I think that came from the fact that we're based in New York. You know, there's a lot of movement is happening in the space in places like California and Colorado. And, you know, but for them go us, right? Like, they're sort of leading the charge on what can happen and what sort of, like, new industries can pop up. But I think being in New York, we realized what a sort of a gap there was between the sort of cannabis industries that are popping up and then the general consumer who doesn't necessarily have access to it. And New York is probably one of the more, like, free-thinking liberal cities you can get that are outside of California or Colorado or Washington. Now imagine you're in Texas or Arizona or anywhere that it is still, like, entirely illegal. And so I think having sort of that mindset of remembering what it's like for most people that don't live in a, like, legal state is kind of part of our coverage and how we approach it.
Have you run up against any business challenges that have to do with the fact that you have that marijuana is like a big
cannabis
part of
adjacent?
Your
adjacent,
brand?
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit. I think it's not. It's nothing that we didn't expect coming into this. And frankly, like even coming into this in the first place, you know, that was a conversation David and I had.
Were you nervous about it?
Oh, for sure. And I think we quickly noticed that one of us was more nervous, and that's me. And I do think being a woman is a slightly different, or brings a slightly different perspective. You know, when we talked about it, I was sort of like, what does this mean for the rest of my career? Yeah. Like, if this doesn't work, which I'm, you know, not particularly...
You have to go into any business prepared for it not to.
Totally. Yeah. Like, all right, so what's the worst case scenario? This goes up in flames. Yeah. Or maybe the worst case scenario is, like, no one ever... It's not even
smoke.
That. It's, like, just nothing happens.
Yeah.
Just a whisper. And, you know, what would I be perceived as? Am I always going to be that sort of, like, editor, the weed
the editor?
Editor,
stoner.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stoner editor, the stoner writer, the, like, the woman who started that weed business.
Right.
Am I comfortable with that being, you know, part of my byline or resume? And I just kind of realized, one, I felt really, really strongly about the way we were going to approach it. And that if that was going to be a problem, like if even the way we were approaching it wasn't going to change the conversation or was going to make people look down on me, then that was sort of like even more of an inspiration that like, why can't we change? Like, I'm a highly productive person.
Right. You're highly functioning.
Yeah, I'm highly functioning, highly productive. I work really, really hard. And I should be able to like say I'm having a glass of wine and or I'm like going to go home and like smoke a little bit of a joint or like eat a low dose edible in the same sentence and not have it be like
such a thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you brought up the difference in the way you guys felt about it and how having to do in part with the fact that you're a woman. And I know that I've also heard you talk about a really important consciousness on your part that it's also different because you are white and your business partner is white. And the whole experience of marijuana slowly being legalized and the rules around it becoming more lax has incited a lot of really relevant conversation around why all of a sudden it's okay and who it's okay for, because people of color have suffered greatly at what are now considered really small infractions and have gone to jail for a long period of time and have their lives ruined and are still going to jail for it. So I think that that's a really interesting thing that I'm glad that you guys are thinking about as part of this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was something from the beginning that we realized we wanted to sort of almost like Trojan horse that conversation into the lifestyle space. You know, like I said, you asked me to describe Gossamer in a sentence earlier on. It was a lifestyle publication for people who also smoke weed. So we're not an inherently political publication, but cannabis is inherently political.
Yeah, 100%.
Like you cannot cover cannabis without acknowledging that. So I think what our hope is to be able to have some of those conversations in spaces that people wouldn't maybe necessarily expect them or see them. So those conversations around like legislation and social justice are certainly happening, I think, on B2B sites, a lot of like political sites and media sites, but they're not necessarily hitting like the average consumer, the person who's like, yeah, I smoke weed. I want something like beautifully designed.
I want to know what's up.
Yeah. And so we thought there was an opportunity for us to sort of like reach a much broader audience and host some of those conversations in a way that were hopefully like informative and eye-opening. You know, the first event we ever did for Gossamer was at The Wing, and it was a panel on women in cannabis and the importance of diversity in the industry and how to sort of like bring that in from the ground up. And that's not just about, you know, handing someone a permit. There's education that needs to go into it. Like the incredible amount of money you need to enter this space. You know, that means the systemic problems are the same as they're worse than they would be in like tech, where whatever it's like, you know, 90% of funding goes to men. I'm sure you guys know the stats better than I do. Now imagine that in the cannabis space, it's like 10 times worse. And it's particularly difficult for people of color. And then so it's about having those conversations and then hopefully putting our money where our mouth is too, and that the community we're building, both in the people that build it, the creators, the writers, the people we interview, and the people we sort of like bring to events and spotlight, reflect like the actual diversity of the people who smoke cannabis, or the community that does. Which I think the one thing that people are always very surprised about or don't think about is that is the least partisan issue out there.
The actual smoking.
Republicans, Democrats, like everybody wants cannabis legalized, and also everyone smokes weed.
I listen to a lot of country music, and there's a lot of singing about marijuana.
Really?
I mean,
I'm not surprised that the country music scene is into it. I just don't think I realized they were singing about it.
Yeah. What are some of the marijuana businesses that you have discovered and that you've covered that you're really excited about that people should look into?
Yeah, we have a few favorites. Not surprisingly, a lot of them are women-led, which is cool. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons we did that panel it's not quite parity, but of any other industry, cannabis has the highest percentage of female founders and female CEOs. It's still only like 30%.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's
That's
better.
Something.
Yeah, yeah. It's better than
anywhere
else. You
gotta give a shout out to Higher Standard Packaging, a company that appears in our
book. Do you know about Higher Standard Packaging?
No.
Verena, no. Erica's doing
it's
like a
I'm supposed to be the
here.
Cannabis expert and you're
well,
already
they're
introducing
a, they're,
me to someone?
They're a packaging company,
they're a,
to be
they're
fair.
They're a packaging company. Yeah.
So we're writing this book called Work Wife, mm-hmm. and we're featuring other work wives, partners, co-founders, mm-hmm. What have you in it. And these two women are based in Denver, Colorado. They have been friends for 40 years. Yeah, maybe approaching 40 years. They were both retired. One was in marketing her whole career. The other was a teacher, Deb and Barb.
They met on like a float.
They met on a St. Patrick's Day parade float like 30 or 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they started a marijuana packaging business doing, you know, child safe jars and things like that. And they are amazing.
They're incredible. And it's so funny. It was like such a lark. It was that they were helping somebody as a favor with some research project
and
figured
just realized
out that
there
so was
much
huge
potential.
Opportunity
yeah. Yeah.
in packaging because marijuana has specific packaging yeah. requirements and yeah. they're in Denver. And so they're right at the heart of it. And yeah, they're in their 50s or 60s. And they said they have, and you know, all of these girlfriends who are skittish, who are like,
scared to go into a dispensary.
Yeah,
will you guys buy
come
this thing
me?
For me?
And they
yeah.
said, no, you just got to put on your big girl panties and go.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good motto. Although I would just love dispensaries to become a place that like make people comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
true.
The other
yeah, yeah,
thing
yeah. That's
we
the other
saw
side
in
of the coin.
Yeah. Like, yeah. There's nothing. Like, where's somewhere that you would like send your mom and be right. like, you're going to be fine. No one's going to be weird. No one's going to make fun of you. Mm-hmm. You're going to be well taken care of. You're going to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true.
We interrupted you. You were going to tell us some of your
favorite business.
That's our favorite women-owned cannabis adjacent business.
I'm going to look into Higher Standards.
Please do.
That's cool. Yeah. I also love the idea that they aren't like, you know, 20-something
no,
starting
totally.
A business.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not that, I mean, anybody
They came out of
one.
Retirement to do this. Like Michael Jordan or something.
They're the Michael Jordan of cannabis,
packaging.
That
yeah.
should be their new line.
That's right.
Of a kind says.
We'll blurb their packaging.
Some of my favorite brands. I think what's interesting is a lot of cool stuff is coming in the like cannabis adjacent space. So mm-hmm. accessories, mm-hmm. brands like Tetra.
Yes.
They're a retailer and a brand. They're both based in New York too, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Monica Kemsrov and Eviana Hartman, I believe.
We know them.
Yeah.
You know them. Oh yeah, you connected.
They're very, they're very designy.
One of you did. Yeah.
I used to work with Monica when I worked in magazines.
So they're awesome. Yeah. And I think they were sort of like almost first out of the gate.
They've been doing it for a couple of years.
Saying there's an opportunity to do something that's a little more high design, high quality, mm-hmm. Maybe more sort of like thoughtfully approached. So I love Tetra. And I think they just have incredible taste. So I have to also give them credit that I feel like a lot of the brands I discover through Tetra because they really have their sort of finger on the pulse from a retail perspective. Another slightly sort of more, I think, indie accessories retailer that I love is Sweet Flag. Hmm. Also two women. They are between Boston and Philly.
Hmm.
New York, Brooklyn and Philly. And it's sweetflag.club. And they do a great job of sort of curating their accessories. They make some of their own. And they when you go to their site, the experience is awesome. And they divvy it up in between before, during, and after for like what you're shopping for.
That's amazing.
So, you know, what's
in the after section?
After, they have awesome like color therapy glasses
amazing.
I love. They're like $20. You can get like magenta or ultraviolet. They have, you know, candles, the type of thing.
I thought you were going to say gummy bears or something.
Right. I mean, they don't sell snacks, but they should probably add that to the after. And then in terms of like actual cannabis brands, Bloom Farms is probably one of our favorites. Mm-hmm. They're out of California, I believe, originally, but maybe double check that. But they also have a really good social advocacy arm in terms of like donating their profits. And I think doing meal donation as well. I believe in December they hit like their 1 millionth meal given for free based
on
the
profits.
Which is cool. And their products are just really, really, really good and high quality. I also love Bebo, which is out of LA. That's by the founder of former president of Uke's Group.
Wow.
USA. So So like you have some sort of like high fashion people coming into this space.
Interesting.
And Scott Campbell is his partner on it, the tattoo artist.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
That's so interesting.
So those are some of my favorites. I'm sure there's like a million more, but those are my top four.
What's it like launching a media business in what year? You launched in 2017.
We launched in 2017. It's so confusing because we've been talking about it and then you kind of like work on it to launch it. But we launched in 2017. We launched like 4 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
It feels like it's been longer.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I believe you. You would know. But yeah. Okay.
Well, we had like it's like, you know, the Instagram was live. We did like a sort of soft event, but we launched in November. Okay. The website went live in December.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what is it, I guess, currently like 4 months in to launching a media business?
I'm exhausted. It's great. It's exciting. It's exhausting. You know, I've worked on a lot of different publications and I've launched a lot of different websites for people, but I've never done it 100% completely from scratch. There's always been like some existing organization that was and some infrastructure that was sort of there. So it's exciting because I feel like we are beholden to no one. We built the site purposely to not have banner ads. So I'm not interested in, you know, getting into this sort of like pay-per-clicks.
CPM game.
Not at all. I really, you know, the other thing that we wanted to do in building Gossamer is I felt really strongly that it was entirely possible to build a brand, whether you want to call it a media brand or a community or however you want to describe it, in a way that was like authentic and meaningful. And maybe you don't end up like the BuzzFeed of the world, but you have an audience that cares what you put out and comes directly to you to see it.
So how do you guys make money if you don't have display
well,
ads?
We do have advertisers, or we got one sort of. we didn't intend on doing any advertising for the first year. We really wanted to like build the community and like, you know, sort of like modeled our business plan so that we could do that without feeling the pressure of, you know, trying to convince someone to give us the money. But a week after we launched, HBO emailed us.
Amazing.
And asked if we were taking any advertisers yet.
No big deal.
You said we weren't going to, but we'll consider it.
Basically.
And then they wanted you more.
So High Maintenance and HBO was our first advertising partner. And we just wrapped our campaign with them, which ran for a few weeks in January. So that's what we've done so far, which is really, really exciting.
Good for you.
We're working with partners on events. So like dinner series. We have obviously haven't talked about it, but the print magazine that's coming out in April.
Exciting.
So we're not.
And the subscription prices are really reasonable. Shockingly, I feel like.
I mean, it's a biannual.
Still.
I think it's works out to about like, I think it's 38 for two issues.
But they're really beautiful.
Yeah, I hope so. I think they are. I hope everyone finds them beautiful. Mm-hmm. What we wanted to do was make something that people got really excited about. And I know everyone says this, but like felt like something they could keep, put on their coffee table. And we describe it on the website this way, but is more of almost like an activity book than a magazine. And, you know, one of the activities is definitely reading, but we just wanted it to feel really like immersive and more than something you would just flip through. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's something you can experience in a few different ways. Like one is in the store and you see it and you sort of like, okay, this is my, you know, curiosity has peaked and I'll bring it home. And then maybe you read one article one day and then maybe you like get a little high on a Sunday and spend a couple hours just hanging out with your issue of Gossamer. And hopefully that the takeaway from that is it's the best possible way to spend a Sunday.
That is lovely.
Yeah.
How have you sort of attracted an audience and who do you find that your audience is?
We have been fairly organic at this point, for lack of a better word. So we told our friends, sent a couple emails out saying we have an Instagram account and sign up for our newsletter. And then obviously we've done a handful of press. But other than that, I would say it's really been word of mouth. And that has been so thrilling. I don't think, unlike anything I've ever done, and I think David would say the same thing too, I've just never had such like instant reactions from people being like, I love what you're doing. I want to be a part of it. I mean, whether that's like DMs on Instagram or people emailing us directly. We have an email. It's hi@gossamer.co. We literally respond to everything we get right now.
Hi, like H-I or H-I-G-H?
Just H-I.
Okay.
Hi. Come say hi. Hi@gossamer.co. Yeah. It goes directly to David or I. So if you email us, it's coming to one of us. And right now we respond because it's still so thrilling. Like, when someone cold emails or like out of the blue just says like, hey, I'm into this. I'm 24 and I live in upstate New York and I love what you're building. And like, this speaks to me.
That's pretty special.
That means a lot. So it's mostly been through that. And I just, you know, there's a huge community of people out there, people that smoke and or also smoke and they do a bunch of other things. And so that's those are the types of people we want to feature and do that interview series that we do. The conversations, the way we pick people are the type of person you would sit next to at a dinner party and walk away from being like, oh my God, I'm so happy that's where I got sat. Or like, I met the coolest person last night and like, you have to go hang out with her. So they don't have to be, you know, we don't pick people because they have like a giant social media following. We don't pick people because like they're super buzzy or famous, although if they are, cool. We really try and pick people that like, who would I want to sit next to at a dinner party? Or who would like someone just feel like thrilled to talk to? And that could be like, I mean, I'm still trying to track down if you guys know some sort of like NASA engineer that wants to be
I know a couple.
We gotta think about the right one.
You know, you wanna curate this just right. But like the person you just are like, what do you do? And tell me everything about you. So, you know, that those people are our people.
You were saying that you and David knew that you wanted to start something together. How did you know? How did you know that you two were right to start a business together?
Yeah, well, we were both freelancing and consulting at the same time. So I think timing helps.
Yeah,
we were both people who were sort of like interested in starting a business. So we met working at the Huffington Post together almost 10 years ago, which feels crazy now. It was 2000, I guess, sometime between 2007 and 2009. And we both had sort of like been working in media and startups and on different sides of it. And we, in the sort of freelance consulting world where you're like working from coffee shops a lot, we would like meet up and work together. And I think, I don't know, the way we talked about it is we both saw that there was something like fundamentally kind of broken in media, and felt like maybe we could at least find a solution for ourselves. I can't speak as much for David, but for me, looking at sort of job opportunities that were coming my way, everything as exciting or big or, you know, sort of like cool as a publication might be, every time I would sort of look at a content strategy for them, it's all the same. You know, it was all, okay, cover the Kardashians, like what's going to be big on Facebook? And I think, you know, probably David felt similar. It's all the same stuff we did at the Huffington Post like 9 years ago.
That
depressing. Stuff hasn't changed. You know what's going to get clicks. So if you want to build a website and get a million uniques based on that, that's not hard to do. You're just going to have to do that again and again and again and again. And they're not going to be dedicated and they're not going to really care what you're putting out. And that I think that was something that we just both talked about. And we were like, let's do this. I think we can prove that we can that there's a way to build a sustainable publication that people care about and that print would be a part of that, which feels insane. But, you know, if you run the numbers and you look at the business plan, right, like it is doable. You just have to like not be trying to be a Condé or a Hearst, which, you know, I'm not sure anyone wants to be right now.
One thing I really want to talk about is CBD.
Yes.
And
I
just,
really want to
just
talk about
like
it.
Cannabis plus beauty in general. Because we are seeing, I mean, one of the best-selling products on our website is a CBD balm.
Yeah.
We get pitched marijuana adjacent beauty lines all of the time.
Can we say marijuana adjacent? Are we supposed to say cannabis adjacent?
Say cannabis.
Okay.
The
What's the difference?
Of, like, the term marijuana is not ideal.
Okay. Why?
I mean, it's not.
I don't know
it's
anything about this.
I feel like I've been using them as synonyms, but
I have no idea.
I mean, but this is part of like, I think the education in the space that again, like some of those conversations are happening, but they're not always like reaching like the average consumers unless you're reading like a, you know, a publication purely about cannabis or weed, you might not see it. And that's, it's a learning curve for me too. I think a lot of probably not unlike the landscape around everything we talk about in this country right now, whether that's like race or feminism and sort of equal rights is like realizing how much dark history there is. But the, you know, I'm going to give this like a real top line. Becca Grimm wrote a great piece for Splinter recently that outlines why marijuana is a not great term to use. But generally it's it was like sort of instituted as a derogatory term towards Mexican immigrants. And the idea,
no
like
idea.
People were consuming cannabis, like, you know, in the U.S. already, but they started using the term marijuana specifically to target like Mexican immigrants and like the marijuana they were smoking. And, you know, all the sort of pejorative and terrible attributes that
Thank you for educating us. That is so useful. See, yeah. I was just getting shamed recently for calling it pot because I was told that it made me seem so, old.
Like a grandma.
Your dad.
Yeah, which I had no idea. And then I said, well, what should I call it?
I think my parents called it Mary Jane.
Exactly. Grass. Like, yeah, I'm not calling it grass. Yeah. Give me a break. And then so I said, well, what should I call it? And the young people around me said loud. And I was like, I will not.
No. Thank
loud?
You.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard this.
Wow.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have introduced so to our audience and Verena to loud.
Yeah, we say, you know, it's interesting. I think when we talk about it from like an industry perspective, we say cannabis.
Yeah.
And when we talk about it from like a personal perspective or, you know, in content, we say weed because mm-hmm. that's what we say.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand why people use the word cannabis. It just doesn't necessarily feel real. Trying to find the right language. And yes, marijuana is not a great term.
Can we talk about CBD?
Yes,
and
please.
The cannabis industry and beauty industry merging in general and what's happening there, because one of the big best-selling products on our site is a CBD rub. We get pitched on cannabis-infused beauty lines all of the time.
CBD. We love CBD. I love CBD.
What is CBD?
What is it? How does it work?
So CBD is basically, in a nutshell, non-psychoactive cannabis. Mm-hmm. So cannabis has a bajillion, that's a scientific term, mm-hmm. Different plants and properties, and THC, which is what's in the cannabis you smoke to get sort of high or have that psychoactive effect, is one of them. Mm-hmm. And then CBD is the other one. It stands mm-hmm. for cannabidiol.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that word written out.
Yeah.
I know which one you're talking about.
I swear on my life, I mean, you can keep this in or take it out. I have to like practice saying it every time I have to say that word out loud. I don't. It's like my kryptonite. I cannot. But that's what it stands for. And it is non-psychoactive. So that means you are not going to have the effects mm-hmm. That people associate with cannabis, which makes it a great thing for people who are maybe nervous mm-hmm. and want to dip their toe in a little bit. There are incredible sort of health and wellness benefits for cannabis across the board. Mm-hmm. But CBD is one that they're exploring a little more rigorously because it is non-psychoactive. And that's something that other people can try. CBD is legal in all 50 states mm-hmm. As long as it's produced from industrial hemp, mm-hmm. Which is to say cannabis that has no THC in it. The moment you start putting THC in it, it has to be within the state itself. So mm-hmm. you'll see products sold in California that are CBD and THC. Mm-hmm. The ones you can get here, and I'm sure the one you sell on your site
is hemp derived.
Yes.
Yeah.
I assume you guys.
Oh yeah.
That.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love it. I mean, the benefits are incredible. So most people, it's a little bit different for everyone, but you know, like the sort of general thing is stress relief, mm-hmm. anti-anxiety. That's if you're taking it in a tincture or mm-hmm, sort of like mm-hmm, edible mm-hmm. form. And then in some of the balms or salves, it's like for muscle aches and pains. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good if you have like a stiff neck or you wake up with like,
it's like a tiger balm kind
exactly.
of effect, but
yeah.
less like tingly and less stinky.
And so, yeah, I think that that's actually probably one of like the biggest growth opportunities in the industry and something that we are at least more and more getting questions about. That's probably the thing people ask me about the most now that I've become this like, you know, I guess intentional. I was going to say unintentional, like cannabis expert, but like. I guess intentional.
Yeah.
You know, people come to me
this.
To ask their weed questions.
Yeah.
And the one I'm getting all the time is about CBD. So we're actually working on like a very sort of a robust and thorough, but I think very user-friendly guide to CBD. Because sort of in the space we've looked around, I feel like people cover it.
Yeah.
But you see either like the cannabis-specific sites covering it and they don't do it from like a really clear, clean sort of entry-level
approach.
They
assume a certain amount of knowledge.
Yeah. And then I think you're seeing it more and more in mainstream publications because I think, you know, this is where sort of your question was going, like beauty products are starting to incorporate it, but they're not necessarily writing about like the specifics of CBD.
Right.
They're sort of writing about it a little bit more surface level. Like this has CBD in it, which is a kind of weed. And like that's new and buzzy.
I also think that there's this like interesting moment where wellness is just very like interested in. We're mm-hmm. interested in ashwagandha as a supplement. So we're interested in CBD and we're interested in all of these sort of roots and herbs and tinctures that maybe wouldn't have taken off 10 years ago if CBD had a presence then.
But I think it's just such an exciting product. And I think it's one of the few sort of additives, you know, that could be in a beauty product, in a balm, something that you sort of have like a little bit every day.
Yep.
It's one of the few that like you really can feel an instantaneous effect that is not discomforting. It's if anything, it's just really, really, really nice. If you're ever nervous, I think we did a CBD infused dinner actually a couple weeks ago where instead of doing like a THC infused dinner, which a lot of people do, we thought, I want something that everyone can come to, not have to second guess it.
Yeah.
And even the CBD was optional because I don't want to force anyone to try something they're nervous about. And, you know, we did this sort of like FAQs so that anyone who wasn't familiar
it
would, you know what they're getting into. And we clearly were like, the worst case scenario is that you sleep really well tonight. You know, like the worst, like if you eat all of the CBD in this entire restaurant, you might just wake up tomorrow being like, man, I slept well, which is, that's a good thing.
I enjoy the Charlotte's Web brand CBD oil, which is like you take it like a tincture.
Yep.
And you can get it on the internet. Yep. I've seen it sold at a couple different places in New York. My acupuncture place sells it. It is just like a nice calming
When you
thing.
Take CBD on a regular basis like that, what are the desired effects that people are hoping for? Or why are you taking it daily, I guess?
I think if you're taking it daily and you're taking it as a tincture or something you're ingesting, let's say, it's, I think, anti-anxiety, sort of relaxation, sleep. It's also CBD is like a, I mean, cannabis across the board, but it's an anti-inflammatory. So it's really good for your digestive system. They still have to do more studies to obviously prove all of these things or sort of like show the literal effects, but good for your digestive system, your skincare, all of those things are combined, right?
Yeah.
So if like you're sort of helping everything move properly in your body and cleaning out your system, then the same thing is going to reflect on your face. I think the catch with CBD that we're sort of paying attention to, and I wish regulation would move faster, is just being able to actually regulate it. You know, like how much CBD is in the product you're getting.
Which when dosages.
That's something that I think the industry is catching up on, and and I hope that we can serve as sort of a guidepost for people for that too.
Do you know who else I know who's really into CBD?
Who?
My parents' dog.
Oh, right. He also is a fan of Charlotte.
She
is also a fan of Charlotte.
She recently has gotten on board with Charlotte's Web. Yeah, but she was using some other CBD oil.
Well, that's right. I was going to say the other intro to CBD is like when people talk about like weed for dogs or pet products that have cannabis, it's like 99% of the time it's CBD.
She's an old dog and she has like bad joints and is just not, you know, she's not doing great.
Yeah.
And it makes it like calms her down and it makes her feel better.
Yeah. I keep meaning to get some for my dog, who's like an ancient French bulldog, like Methuselah old. I have no idea how old. And I think it would make him feel so good. But I'm like, he already sleeps like 23 hours and like 55 minutes a day that I don't.
But
like,
those
I'm
5 minutes when he's up, he'd be just so zen.
I guess Like, is he even going to move? He might not.
And we should clarify that the balms don't really have that sort of effect. That's more of like a stress relief, pain relief, like muscle relaxation.
They have like a tiger balm effect. Like
they do.
Say.
I really like it for headaches
soothing.
And stress.
Yeah. Talk about headaches. Yeah. And CBD for migraines too. I don't know if you've been exploring this at all, but
big time. I don't know
Game
if
changer.
I'm allowed to make medical claims on this podcast, but I enjoy them
for you,
related to the fact that I get migraines. I find that it is a helpful thing.
I for sure do. I mean, I think that I don't know. I don't want to make medical claims.
No,
either,
you though. Can make medical claims.
I can make medical claims.
Yeah, we will just disavow them entirely.
I am not making any medical claim other than we've talked about this, have terrible migraines.
Me too.
And I've had them my entire life. And one of the for sure causes I can confirm from like a neurologist is anxiety.
Yes.
If I get really, really stressed, I will trigger a migraine.
Oh my gosh.
So I wouldn't say this necessarily constitutes as medical advice, but I find CBD relaxes me and helps me sleep better and helps me not feel anxious.
Yeah.
And
which means you get less migraines because you're not anxious.
Right. And I'm not anxious about getting migraines. So even if it's entirely psychosomatic, it works. And I found it very, very helpful. So that's my tip.
I love that tip.
Yeah.
I don't endorse it. I don't agree with it. I love it.
Yeah, totally. What has been, switching gears, what have been the surprising hard things about just starting a business, just plain old starting a business?
I think we talked about this recently. I have been so shocked and constantly mortified at how many favors and free things I have to ask people for.
Yeah, we did talk about this because you were talking about it and I was getting PTSD.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that is right. That is like part of starting a business, which is crazy. And you have to like put yourself out there in a really specific way.
Putting yourself out there is that's another way of putting it. I think that's probably a better way than being like, I ask people for favors all the time. But I do.
Yeah.
You know, because you're the budgets are smaller. You're just constantly asking for introductions. You're asking people how to do things because, you know, you can't know everything. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like I'm constantly asking for people's time and money and effort and networks.
I always say that just getting comfortable with asking for things is one of the most important qualities you have to start a business, because it's advice, favors, free things, all of it.
Yep.
You know what I think you're really good at, Vraina, is asking.
This is a fun part of the podcast.
Is asking for really specific things.
Okay.
It's not like this blanket, like, you know, do you know anybody like X? It's like, I'm having this shop.
She says, do you know a NASA engineer?
Well, do you know a NASA engineer? Not really just like, specific. Do you know anybody that could be in Gossamer? Do you know a NASA engineer?
That's right.
I have the Shopify problem. Do you know how to fix it? Mm-hmm. You emailed us the other day.
Oh my God. I'm getting PTSD because I feel like all I do is ask you guys questions.
No, you don't. You ask us like three questions ever. These are just the three of them. You emailed us the other day asking us about our email, like, process, because we CC each other on everything, and you were asking, you know, why we do that and if it's useful, basically. These are all, like, first of all, questions people are happy to answer, and also questions people can answer in 2 minutes.
Right.
You're not being like, will you brainstorm this thing for me so I don't have to?
Which is very different. The solution for the answer for the question I don't
exactly.
even know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, I guess a little bit intentional. I want to be mindful of people's time, and I know what it's like to get a very, very open-ended question and be like, and it ends up being that email that sits at the bottom of your inbox, because you want to dedicate the time to answer it.
Yeah.
And anything that you think is going to take more than 5 minutes, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. No, totally.
So, I thank you, I guess.
Yeah.
But thank you guys for being always so helpful and answering all my questions in like 5 minutes. You respond immediately. How do you do that when you're both on all the emails?
Because it's also so easy.
It was an easy one.
Yeah.
My other favorite saying related to this is that closed mouths don't get fed.
Oh.
So you have to open up and ask.
That is really true. I say that all the time, but just about like work in general.
Yeah.
Anything in your professional career, your personal life, like, you know, especially your personal life even. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something you can't complain when you haven't said something. Like, you can't get mad about something if you haven't asked for it. You can't say you're not giving me this thing when you haven't told someone that you need it or you want it.
Gosh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
one. Hey, I think we should end on that note.
That's right.
Oh,
that's the show. You can listen to us wherever podcasts are found, like Stitcher, iTunes, and now Spotify. Follow us at Of A Kind on Instagram and Twitter, and like our Facebook page. If you have ideas or requests for the show, email them to afewthings@ofakind.com. And if you want to advertise, that's advertising@ofakind.com. Our intro music, Butterfield East, and it's written and performed by the Soulful Saints. Our audio editing is care of Liz Smith, and we record in the lovely East Village apartment of Alex, also known as Showbra Studios.
So many of you guys write in and ask about our theme song. It is called Butterfield East, and it is composed and performed by the Soulful Saints.
You can check them out over at dallarecords.com. That was a HeadGum Podcast.